25 years ago was the LA uprisings after the Rodney King verdict. Teddy and I are going to dive into the movie LA 92 documentary done on National Geographic. If you haven't checked out the interview that Teddy and I did with them, make sure you go back, check out the interview that we did with the directors. We're going to cover the movie. We actually got to see it on the screener day before it was premiered. It premiered already last night on National Geographic. I'm sure you can check it out online somewhere, or it's re-airing. But I would encourage everyone to watch this. We're going to dive into a lot of different topics within the film and a lot of different other random things. And we're going to review it, talk about it, dissect it, because it's kind of real deep. And especially between me and Teddy, because we were a little bit before middle school, right before when this was happening during the 92 riots. So that was kind of a beginning of our ending of our adolescence was around that time. So definitely check this out. Keep email us, subscribe. This is going to be a joint effort between the Lando Calrissian Experience podcast and Straight Outta Low Cash podcast. So if you aren't subscribed to either one of them, make sure you go subscribe to one of those on your feed that you get any of your feeds from on podcast. Let us know what you think. Email us straightolc@gmail.com or landocalpod@gmail.com. Hope you enjoy this, and we want to get some discussion going on, and let us know what you think. All right, we're back, Teddy, with another episode of We Don't Need to Go to the Movies Together. this one, we're covering the LA 92 documentary from Dan Lindsay and TJ Martin. Me and Teddy got to check it out last night on a screener at the Esquire. So shout out to National Geographic letting us get in on that to check that out. What is your initial thoughts kind of on the movie in itself, or kind of just your initial thoughts, Ted?
It's really powerful, man. I honestly like the way that they went about it by letting us, you know, create our own interpretation of how things kind of happened and how they developed. You know, so since the whole documentary is just really shot with archival footage, with no sort of political commentary or, it just gives us a chance to form our own opinion about, you know, why things happened and, you know, the climate and what the people were feeling, without, you know, what we have today, where people, everything is a, as an opinionated political show, you know what I mean? And, you know, trying to figure out ways of manipulating even the things that you see for your own eyes. Like, it's really, I thought it was really eye-opening when, even when Rodney King was, you know, taken by the police, you know, taken down by the police, and the footage comes out, and the first thing they do is, you know, they go back to his criminal, you know, his criminal record. Mm. I was like, dude, tactics haven't changed at all. Like, you know, that old line, the same shit, different day, still applies, man.
Yeah, the documentary, it was interesting because I actually watched another documentary, like, literally earlier, and I recorded it. It came out last week on Showtime called Burn, Motherfucker, Burn. And it basically is a different kind of documentary than this one, because this one is set up because everyone that's listening, make sure you check it out. It comes on tonight, Sunday, as you listen to this on 8 or 9 o'clock on National Geographic, depending on, you know, where you are, central or eastern standard time. But
On Burn, Motherfucker, Burn, it was more of a general, your regular documentary where they would show stuff and they had someone commentating about their feeling or what they knew about that situation or if they were there. This one, like Teddy was saying, it's just clips of different things from video to audio recordings of people that actually were there, like the actual things that were happening. So they just stitched together random videos, random recordings, random people interactions. So there was no basis for or direction of the documentary because it was just the footage they found and they put it all together. So the documentary has its own voice in its way. Then it's different than Burn, Motherfucker, Burn, which gives context to the voice. So I would say actually they're companion pieces to a lot of extent. And I would encourage everybody to watch Burn, Motherfucker, Burn too, because that was more of a commentary. It's like watching a baseball game and seeing was our basketball game, it being at the game, seeing it, but it's a different feeling when you're watching it with your commentators watching, because you get different feelings. You get a different feeling from sitting courtside watching the Golden State Warriors play, but it's not better or worse than watching it at home with the commentators. It's just a different experience, a different way of looking at it.
Well, I think with the commentary, they allow you to bring in their own ideas and opinions on things, and you know, they kind of
right.
shape
just like
what
with basketball,
what you're
though. Seeing. Just like basketball, yeah. too, though. You'd be like, they're running the ISO, like, but I didn't even see them run the ISO. Like, I was sitting right there, but okay.
I mean, it could be a good and bad thing because, yeah. In speaking with the directors, it also helps you get a stronger sense of yourself because, you know, they always talked about, you know, the whole idea of the documentary was just to humanize everything and take out those political pieces. So it's really weird because when you do that, you start to, you know, develop your own opinion about what's going on. But it's really interesting to see what would happen if you do go watch Burn, Motherfucker, Burn and don't agree with, like, let's say the political pieces, or you start to realize how often or... Yeah, how often you can, or easily you can be persuaded by people dropping in pieces of, you know, background information you may not know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you got to be really careful, because, you know, which is probably why, you know, they do drop in somebody's criminal history. Because, you know, if they're for police, I don't want to say for police brutality, but in support of police, you know, you have those people, like, anytime the police do anything, they're always right. You know, they say, look, yeah, this person has a, you know, he had a warrant for, you know, driving recklessly or whatever.
Smoking PCP.
You know, and right, exactly. And, you know, it was like, yeah, well, that was 10 years ago. Like, what does that have to do with what's happening right now? You know, but that's all it takes for, you know, for certain people to be like, well, once a criminal, always a criminal. And it's like, well, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to look at it. So I was really appreciative of them just, you know, letting us have it and, you know, making our own decisions about it.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened to our conversation with the directors, you can go back into the feeds and check out the conversation we had with Dan Lindsay and TJ Martin. But one of the things that struck me is, like, almost it felt like they were, I wouldn't say they were reluctant directors, but it wasn't like they were, like, trying to necessarily put an agenda. They was like, dude, this is all the stuff we found, man, like, that we got access to. Like, it, you know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense to you, Ted. Like, they weren't, I don't say reluctant. They wasn't like they were like, yo, we was trying to show how it was. The man was trying to pull down people.
No. They definitely gave off the vibe of, like, yo, this is what we found. It's almost like a court case with just the judge and the people defending.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the for and against. Like, no lawyers, no jury. Like, here are the facts. Here's what happened. You decide, you know.
That's a good
one. You make the decision what needs to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you're on a jury. You're basically on a jury, and it's going to put all this evidence in front of you.
Right, exactly. Like, but with no lawyers, nobody trying to spin it, just like, yo, here's what happened, here's what we found, what do you think?
Almost like a case study, almost. Where not a case study where you go into, like, review a...
No, it's a case.
Yeah, like a case study.
It is a case study. They said that. Even the director said that. They were like, yo, we even looked at this like a case study. Like, you know, like, we want you to figure it out for yourselves. You know, things that you believe and whether these, you know, this is wrong or right. You know, we don't want to sway you in any particular direction. You know, and I thought it was kind of cool. And then I still didn't really get it, you know, because they didn't really delve deep into it. But I thought it was interesting that they said they even tried to humanize the police. You know what I'm saying? By showing them into the court and, you know, them having discussion.
But you know what's so messed up? We're so jaded by police that we didn't even see no humanity in that, which is funny.
Hey, you know what's funny? I
get what they were trying to do, but I know what was going on. We grew up in the 92 riots. We knew what would happen. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't feel no compassion towards them walking into court and like them talking about their
parents.
Zero compassion.
Well, here's the funny thing. Like, I don't even know if they were going for compassion because the way that the police entered the courts
was so smug.
I didn't. Well, yeah, they weren't tripping. Niggas is talking about, yeah, man. You know, I got this shirt on because I'm going to a barbecue later that starts at like 6.
Right.
You know, and it's like, what the fuck are you, dude? Yeah. They talking about your life right here. You talking about, you know, nigga got, you know, a Hawaiian shirt on, you know.
That was a dude I think that hit him. That was one of the dudes that hit him the most. That was the dude. That was the dude that had that shirt on. Was the lead commander on that?
It was a commander. It wasn't he was the dude with the taser.
Right, but he was the one.
It wasn't theater.
No, but he was the one that could have stopped everything. Is what I'm saying.
Right, exactly. He wasn't tripping. He was just like, oh, I got this Hawaiian shirt on with some mom jeans and some K-Swiss. I'm like, yeah, we're going to throw some ribs on the barbecue later. Like,
Then he started laughing. I'm going to change inside. Don't worry, y'all. I'm going to change it. But my thing is, why did you even wear that to the court period if the thing's not till later?
Dude, the whole thing tripped me out, bro. But it was also even, like, so it was weird because when they were waiting for the police to arrive, like I said, it's like we don't really change as humans. Like, I really felt like I was looking at the exact same thing with Mike Brown and Darren Wilson. You know what I'm saying? When the black dude was like, yo, this is disgusting, and the white dude was like, I support them. They did what they were right. You know, he was like, he was like, why don't you just shut your mouth? And, the black dude was like, I don't have to shut my mouth. I can say what I want to. He was like, well, keep that fucking shit over there. I'm like, this dude, if you took the L.A. riots away
Mike Brown... You forgot a part that it made it more... The reason a black man got mad because of that. You forgot a very important fact.
What did I leave out?
He brought donuts for them. Like,
oh,
when they get out.
Food for them. Yeah.
When they get off, I'm going to have donuts out here for them when they get off.
Boy, hey, dog.
That's
like,
what made the
like
black man mad. That's what made the black man mad.
Hey, just like Dylan Roof getting to some Burger King on the way to the crowd.
And for people to visually, before you see it, I know it's not spoilable. This is all, but this is just kind of our conversation. But he sits down on this bench like Forrest Gump holding these donuts. And this black man is sitting next to him and he's like, I'm just here to give him some food, some snacks when they get out. And a black man turns and is like, are you crazy?
he's like, dude, you're nuts. He's like, you're a fucking idiot.
The black dude, like, he was kind of educated, though, too, dogs. Yeah, you know, so it was like, he was like, yo, old white man, what's wrong with you?
Dude, tripping. And they, you know, I just support the police at all costs, man. It's like, you know, where's the happy medium?
And I mean, and you know what? I mean, I guess more of my, what, we asked them this question when we were interviewing them, but what was your most shocking thing that you saw from where you, I mean, we experienced this. So it's a weird position. I feel like this OJ, I would say particularly this and OJ were, because we were old enough to know what was going on, but not old enough to really understand,
comprehend
the full encompassing of what it meant, like as a country. You knew like what was going on, what was bad, but you understand culturally how that, you know, changed up stuff.
I mean, for me, I didn't know it was a powder keg the way that it was. Like, you know, I love the way that they, you know, kind of brought it back to the Watts riots.
Yeah.
But I think I said the biggest thing for me, that tipping point was the case before
Latasha
with the young
Hart.
Girl that got shot.
Latasha Hart.
Yeah, Latasha Hart. Yeah, man, I was like, it was like back to back, because something else had happened before Latasha Harlan, didn't? Like, one of the, like, two kids What was the other thing that happened before Rodney King that they were mad? Because something else had happened, and I cannot remember what it was.
I can't remember offhand, but Latasha Harlan was like the main thing, because that was like a week or two before the Rodney King verdict. They had the verdict for her case, the sentencing for Soon Young Lee or whatever.
Hey, man, that right there, it all makes sense, really. For Soon Young Lee to get off and then the cops to get off, it was bound to happen.
Mind, though, and it's something that I asked him in the book when it comes to hip hop, too. That even I understand what they didn't want to put that in there, but I believe a lot of it had to do with Fuck the Police had dropped right around this time.
Oh, what I'm saying? I don't know who was it. I don't know what clip that was or who was speaking, but they were like, yo, we talking about we finna take this shit to the streets, and I'm not talking about marching. And I was like, bruh, that definitely came from hip hop.
Yeah.
I
understand what he was saying, but I don't know if I think that's a nice 20-30% of the LA riots is inspired by hip hop.
I totally don't disagree. I mean, the fact that they were, you know, NWA was pushing it all up to the, honestly, that's why NWA was so revered, was because they were speaking up on a national platform to talk about what was going on.
And not even just NWA, you know what I'm saying? Ice-T, Ice-T, NWA, Ice Cube went solo, was talking about it, you know, Yo-Yo, like all these rappers on the West Coast have been talking about that. And it's just that power came together, man. Like that Latasha Harlan case, man, that's honestly more sadder to me than Rodney King by far.
Well, yeah, I mean, as a child, it's different, though. Like, it's sad, but the other part about it is it's the cops, though. You know what I mean?
Because our problem is... you paid to serve and protect, you're saying.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And this is something like, the rap wasn't about, you know, people of a foreign land coming to do it. It was from us making those mistakes. You know what I'm saying? The police not really doing their job.
But Ice Cube did drop a song right after Latasha Harlan called Black Korea, where he was just dissing Korean shop owners, the whole song.
Oh, see, well, I mean, that's one versus many, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, but and that's something we could talk about in a second, is the relationship between black and Koreans and Koreans in L.A., but I think it's a and for a Midwest perspective for people, it's blacks and Arabs. And to me, I think that would be the equivalent.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's just...
Because that's a Midwest thing. I think Arabs are owning shops, I think, is more of a Midwest thing.
I think what made it resonate was just the fact that it wasn't... it was just more people getting off. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't... They were pissed because a young lady lost her life. That, you know, the person that's supposed to be making these calls was like, oh, she doesn't look like a criminal. You know, they already gave her the sentence, and she completely... reduce the sentence to some bullshit, and then the followed up 2 weeks later with stuff that they've already been complaining about, police brutality, and like they said, this was like one of the first videos to go viral for everybody to be able to see it and make their own call, and then to look this shit dead in the face and be like, yeah, they weren't really doing that much, you know, and got that shit knocked down to like 30 months. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man.
That was federal,
and I don't even know if they had to do that. I don't even know if they actually did that time either.
But it was a smooth kick in the face, G. It was a smooth kick in the face. You know, it like if somebody kick you, it's like literally you having your lunch, walking to sit down at a table, and the bully comes and just knocks the shit out of your hand in front of the principal, and the principal's like, yep. He's an A-plus student, though. He's an A-plus student, and he's a football quarterback. He's like, what the fuck does that got to do with anything?
Right, it sucks to be you.
Right. So, sorry you're black.
I mean, it was a powerful documentary. And one of the other things, one of the things that surprised me was how much it went outside of the black neighborhood, though. Like how it was in Beverly, it wasn't part of Hollywood and stuff, and part of that, it was in downtown LA. Like, in my perspective, what I thought was a kid, I thought it was only in South Central Watts and stuff like that in Compton.
Yeah, that was also a shocker how big did it spread.
Yeah, like, dude, it went pretty far, man. And it wasn't just black people. I would say it was 50-50 after you really boil together all the other areas that were popping.
Yeah.
And the funniest part was them stealing the piano, though. That was the funniest part of the whole thing.
Hey, man. But you know what's funny is that now that I've seen, like, that type of footage, it's... like all the jokes you used to see on Comedy Central
makes sense.
Yeah, the ones on BET and all the rest of them. Yeah, all of them make sense because niggas were stealing everything.
Hey, like everything. You seen the movie Fear of a Black Hat before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, remember the part in there where they walking through the Rise of Riots with Ice Cold, and he was like, "People want to talk about people being lazy. The riots told us that black people weren't lazy. How you going to go get that love scene and not go back for the matching insets?"
Right, exactly. I was watching some comedian this back when I was like 14. And I remember him saying it was a joke, like his mom was always mad at him. He's like, "See, that's your problem. You're just lazy." He said, "What you mean?" She was like, "I came over your apartment. You ain't got no furniture." He was like, "Mom, I only make like $7 an hour." She was like, "Yeah, but down there, you saw what happened in them riots. You could have been got you a TV, a sofa. You just lazy.
Something that you was being lazy not to go through riots, like through.
You didn't. Right, go get you some shit."
Hey, man. It's like another thing that really struck me, and more, and some of this is this cognitive dissonance from the situation, is how crazy that was with the cameras being like kind of right up on stuff, like how chaotic it was.
Like, oh yeah,
like to be in the middle of that is like chaotic. Like I don't understand. Like to be even trying to loot and stuff though, like that's chaotic. Like a part of all that is like chaos.
Yeah, man. Like it gives you an up close look on what a real riot looks like. You know what I'm saying? Like. And how quickly, you know, the numbers grow. Like, you know, cops are like, I mean, I felt, they're appeasing me. I won't say it felt bad for the cops, but, you know, what about the good apples that are, like, called to the front line and you see 400, 500 people coming at you like, "Oh, shit." And it's 17,
hey,
y'all.
Hey, dude, it was and a part that it looked like zombies, didn't it? Like, the one cop was like, "Oh, my God, it looked like it was zombies." Like, enveloping them.
Bruh. And then the captain, the line captain, gonna talk about hold the line, nigga. I quit right now. It's okay. You can send my paycheck next week.
No. Look. I ain't even going. You ain't even gonna know I quit because nobody know what's going on because all the power out everything. So actually, I didn't get the call to come in.
Hey, well they all he had to do was send out what was gonna be happening. It's like we need all cars to. 4th and Central, we got a possible riot. We need people to hold the line. You just hear over the line. This is car 437. I'd like to send in my resignation as of right now.
and the thing about like all this stuff, like during the movie Damn, during the documentary Burn, Motherfucker Burn. It was interesting because it was an interview they did with B-Real from Cypress Hill and Everlast from House of Pain. And they were talking about how they were coming in from a tour date, flying on a plane, looking down and didn't know what the fuck was going on. Like, they were like, what is going on? Like, they just see stuff burning in the middle of the night. They flying in at night. And they just see the stuff burning. And you got to think this is 92. So...
Like, right, you can't. There's no way to real get any real information until you get down.
And think about it. Like even if you miss the TV problem, think if you flying from New York to LA or whatever, the verdict, everything happened by the time you got back.
Hey man, my man was walking down the street lighting palm trees on fire. Dude.
Yeah man, like and nobody was stopping him. Like
you're like, "Hey, they asked him a question. Hey, you really trying to do this?" Yeah.
He didn't even look up at them like to even like acknowledge that they were asking him the question. He answered why he was still burning.
He was like, "Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. Reminds me of home." Like, you live in a volcano? This shit is crazy.
I will give him props though too for actually bringing up, like I said, we talked about a little bit earlier, the Korean aspect of the film and how black people felt, you know, the Koreans were invading the neighborhoods and not part of the neighborhood, not investing in the neighborhood, which I think is something that we still encounter with today. I think that's still a big problem today, is that not, and for the Midwest, I feel like it's more Arab people from Midwest. That's kind of my thing. I think it's more of a Midwest thing when it comes to that. But what did you think about that whole Korean aspect of how they kind of brought that in and kind of shed a light on how Koreans felt during that time?
I think it touched on a lot of people's views.
And how so? What do you mean?
I'm sorry. Basically, because a lot of people, well, it's funny because in the theater, oh, didn't that girl mention that? Didn't she say something about, like, how, you know, they come in?
Yeah, it was a girl that was a girl. Well, we talking about the one girl that was kind of cool, though, not the other one.
Right. No. The one in the back, yeah. The bitch was like, you know, they come in to our residence, they set up shop, they make a ton of money off of us, and then it doesn't get spent back in the community. And I think that
true.
Was...
And they don't
which
have,
is 100% true.
And then was it somebody else talking about that? Or was it... was that NATO that was talking about like how they don't hire anybody that's from the neighborhood? They don't...
Right, yeah, exactly. They, you know, they don't touch anybody. Yeah, they don't... There's no community reinvestment. So I think that's also half the reason why, you know, black people, you know, literally had to put black-owned on their... on their stores.
Yeah, because
they were like, if you could be Korean, you could be, I mean, well, the dude even said it when they were, the riots just started happening, when they started blocking off
they said no Mexicans, no black people, only white people. And what did he call Asian people? He called them something.
He said no Buddha, he said Buddha heads.
Yeah, no Buddha, and no, he said, and he said Buddha heads and whites only.
Right, Buddha heads and white only. So they literally... they were literally looking at people and making a judgment call. I mean, talk about racial profiling.
Teddy, you'd have been in trouble.
Hey, they just kept me in holding.
No, they didn't be like, man, you need three black people to verify you all the way black, man.
Hey, like, well, hey, no fucking shit up. You can slap him a couple times just because you know what's in there, but don't hurt him.
pull out your bag phone real quick, man, and call whoever he say he know. They better pick up, too.
Hey, man, just pop his tire. Give him a flat. Don't break his windows, because he might be black and he can't afford it. But just give him a flat in the back.
But it was crazy. Like literally, they were, like, they were being arbitrary like that. Like, and then it got worse, though. They was beating up black people that were trying to help out people.
Yeah, that's the crazy point, G. Like, it was one extreme or another. Either, like, you with the cause or you against the cause. So if you help a white person, you help an Asian person, we fucking you up. You know, even if you was black. Like, so, because it was weird because they showed a clip of a dude, I think it was a white guy laying on the street, and the preacher was praying over him, but he wouldn't touch him.
Yeah, because he might get his ass kicked.
He might get his ass kicked. I was like, damn, dog. Side note, did you see what it, no, I'll bring that up later. I don't want to ruin it. Go ahead.
No. It was no. It's something about the movie?
No, it's not about the movie. I tagged you in it on Facebook.
Okay.
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about, with the Pope thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to see if that's true or not. I got to research that.
It's a video. They got it on video.
That's a video?
Yeah, there's a video, G. That's on the news. That's a news clip.
Oh, no, okay. I got it. I was like, I saw it. I was like, I can't do this right now. I'm trying to do some editing. I can't do this right now. But, like, one of the other things that struck me was like, yo, like, I ain't gonna front, like, you saying I was a bad person, though, but when I was a kid, we laughed at Reginald Denny getting his ass kicked.
Say it again?
We laughed at Reginald Denny getting his ass kicked.
Hey, man, we talked about that, man. Like, it was really weird, and I wanted to ask the directors that question, but I know we didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
But, and especially the guy that was from mixed, you know, his family being mixed heritage, like, what was, like, the relationship? Or, like, the atmosphere, like, when you went back to school the next day between, you know, whites and blacks. Because I know there was some tension in my class.
Yeah, it was tension in my class, too. We were in the same school, so.
Right. And so we didn't know what to talk. I didn't really know how to address it. You know, I saw what I saw. And I feel like we talked about it. But, like, the teacher kind of, you know, talked about it in front of the class. But there were definitely some very pro-black people, like, you know, hate Whitey, kill Whitey sort of situations. And I wouldn't, you know, my parents, I remember she showed me the clip, but I don't know if we ever discussed it, like, what we were feeling at the time. You know, it was one of those, here we go again with this bullshit sort of situation. It was more of a look. It wasn't a discussion. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't really know. When I came to school, I didn't know how to feel.
Yeah, that was the thing, though, man. I said that was the interesting aspect that, like, I guess the time we grew up with being in there, because we were old enough to get it. Like, we almost in a confusion state. Like, we weren't old enough to really dissect it and really internalize it or not. And we were too old to not recognize it at all, what was going on.
Right, exactly.
You
exactly.
Know? So that was like, we used to laugh, man. Like one of my favorite lines from Ice Cube and Natural Born Killers is talking about Charles Manson. I pull him out of a car, hit him with a brick, and I'm dancing. You know, like that was like a whole thing, man. Like, I remember watching it when it was going down live, man, because that was like crazy. I watched it live, and I was like, yo, pull him out that whip. Pull him out that whip. And I was like, and then I looked back, I was like, yo, I was crazy. That was crazy for me to be on that.
But it just shows you how easily people can get caught up in groupthink and mob mentality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you got to think about it, like, you know, having experiences, being educated to some degree, you know, having different sorts of cultural differences. Like, we have an ability to hone in on our emotions and know when we're tripping sometimes. But some people, like, you have to think about our people who suffer all their life. They're used to acting out of emotion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they ain't even got nothing to do, you know, they might not be anywhere near their they might not be near the actual happening or the situation, but they can get pulled in by that mob mentality because there's just so much anger flying around and you siding with your boys. Like, yeah, fuck them. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's real. Fuck them.
Yeah, man. That's I just always wondered, man, like, I guess if I was older in that time, how I would have been kind of feeling. You got to think about, like, the 92 riots. You got to think about how much that affected. I was thinking about it last night and laying in the bed, man. And I was like, think about all the TV shows that reflected that in different music, TV shows, specials that reflected that 92 riot. And that went off like 2 or 3 years, dog, that people were still talking about.
Well, I think it's like that just because of, you know, we're in a different state with technology, you know, with so many distractions and so many us being able to record on the fly now, you know, it's easier for us to get caught up in the wave and then that wave, you know, die off and get caught up in another one.
This is the biggest riot, though, in the history of America, though, too.
Well, this is true. This is true. This is also true.
We can't forget that part.
Well, I think it's just weird because, like, the closest thing we've had to it has been, you know, Ferguson. You know, yeah. So I'm always wondering,
that's
like,
something that we see a little bit different than everybody else.
Right, exactly, because we're on the home front. You know what I mean? But it's weird because, like, I wonder, like, I literally do wonder what these cops think because the city burned because of that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, or the judge that made the call, like, literally, you are the cause of, you know, America's greatest riot. You know what I mean? Like, that's weird. Like,
I want somebody to
interview Darren Wilson.
Yeah, but they justified, like, no, they did an interview Darren Wilson about it, though. He don't feel no remorse about it at all.
Even though he just came out and said that he lied about Mike Brown taking his gun?
The New York Times or Washington Post did a whole article with him talking about that in the article, he basically tried to make people feel sorry for him going through everything. Like, all the
even though he lied about it.
It's on the Washington Post. It's a nice, long, lengthy article where someone gets a chance to interview him. Because I think the way they were describing, I think he was living out like in Valley Park, Eureka area, something like that. The way they describe, like, where they were at, that's where I kind of was kind of thinking they were. But he was basically saying, like, all the changes he had to go through, how he can't get no job, and how even though people donate all this money, it doesn't mean much because he doesn't have any way to make any living. He doesn't know where he's going to do now and stuff like that because he can't be a cop anywhere. And, like, they basically, the whole article, he was trying to make you feel bad for him. Not, he has no remorse for what happened with everything.
Well, you should have better pick up Weldon, man. Better get on Etsy.
And that's my. And I guarantee you, those cops from Rodney King, most of them don't feel no remorse for it at all. They'll feel. They'll figure out. I mean, like we all feel when most people do dirt, they figure out a way to justify it in their own mind of why it was justifiable for them to do that dirt. Plain and simple. Most people don't have that that morality or that self reflection to be like, man, I was bugging. Like, I was wrong for that, man. I feel bad about that. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean.
Think about all the people that get true. People killed or they're using the environment and, like, you know, tearing down places where people get cancer and stuff. They don't feel bad about that.
No, that's true. I mean, it's all in the sake of, you know, profit. You know, I don't know. I always wonder, I always question, you know, like, rapping with our police friend. You know, it's weird because it's a very slippery slope, as our man A$AP Rocky would say. Because sometimes, you know, he tells me that sometimes you got to do a little bad to do a lot of good. Yeah, you know I mean, and it's weird because in that same sense, he says the system is broken. So sometimes they do got to put a beating down on somebody who won't leave. You know, they got a great lawyer, so they stay in pocket. You know, giving kids drugs, selling them guns, doing all the rest of stuff, and they've taken them in 6-7 times. You know what I'm saying? And can't get booked. Court gets off on the court case, whatever. So they was like, all right, well, we're gonna beat your ass every time we see you until you get the fuck up out this neighborhood. Yeah, and I'm like,
that's the thing, man. It's a thin line, though, man.
It's a thin line, man. It's a very thin line, dude.
Well, man, we gotta get out of here. Everyone, make sure y'all check out LA 92.
It's dope documentary.
It's a dope documentary. Definitely, y'all need to check that out. Let us know y'all thoughts as well. Join in on a conversation with us as well and talk to us about it, what y'all thinks and thoughts. Email us at straightoilc@gmail.com or you can email us because it's going to be a tandem podcast for Lando Cal too. So email us at straightoilc@gmail.com or LandoCalPod@gmail.com. And we appreciate everybody listening again, man. Peace.
Peace.
Correct, we select on the set beats and rhymes that are both in check. Herbie's behind the board, cold getting respect. We are kid and play in total effect. We're getting funky up to par, and that's with a hyped up beat. Just laying on the guitar, you'll feel the bass. It's soft and wet, yes, honey. You'll get a taste, but not just yet. Right, money? The beat is live, troops, so don't front on it. Hit it while the getting's good and just jump on it. Minute by minute, yo, hour by hour. Kid and play got soul power. We're getting funky.